Guardian Unlimited.
Hello, I'm James Randerson, and thank you for downloading Science Extra. This is our exclusive interview with Professor Richard Dawkins. Professor Dawkins' book, The God Delusion, has sold nearly a million copies worldwide and raised hackles amongst the faithful the world over. Guardian Science correspondent Alok Jar talks to him about faith, evolution, Lord Winston, and what else is in his sights after taking on God. Here's Alok.
Okay, well, Richard, I wanted to start with something that we picked up from yesterday's lecture, where you talked to Rosie Boycott about the book, The God Delusion. One of the audience members at the end of that asked you about whether you thought people like the Archbishop of Canterbury and the Bishop of Oxford, who are clearly intelligent men, are also deluded about their belief of God. And you sort of had trouble answering that, and you answered very diplomatically. Do you want to have another go at that?
I do have trouble because, on the one hand, when you talk to people like bishops, I find that I almost always agree with them, and they, it looks to me as though they don't really believe in a supernatural being, and yet they go on going to church and they go on reciting the creed and things. The sort of God that they believe in seems to be so wishy-washy, so sort of undefinable, so hard to get your hands on. It just sort of slips out of your fist like a slippery bar of soap. And so I don't know what they believe in. I was talking on the radio this morning to Robert Winston, who's a devout Jew. He goes to synagogue every week and observes the Sabbath and things. But when I said, "Robert, I know you're observant and devout Jew, but I don't actually think you believe in God." And once again, it was very hard to get what he did. He said, "Well, it depends what you mean by God." And, well, what I mean by God is something supernatural, a supernatural intelligence who existed at the beginning of the universe and created the universe deliberately and has the sort of complexity, the sort of organization of a superhuman intelligence. Now, that's a very concrete thing. You either believe in it or you don't. I mean, you can be very uncertain about it, of course. There's no reason why you shouldn't be uncertain, but at least that's defined. You know what that is. It's something like a superhuman. It's something like a vast brain or a vast computer, the sort of thing that doesn't just spontaneously leap into existence but needs an explanation.
Do you think that some of the reaction to your book, some of the negative reaction from people who say, "Well, look, this is a personal matter for me, my belief in God doesn't affect my daily life," do you think that's because you've asked the people to examine that relationship they might have with this questionable relationship that they have, might have with their God, and whilst they fly planes and take vaccines and so on, the sort of those two parts of their life have never had to be rationalised?
That's before. Right. I mean, I think there really is a mismatch between those two parts of their life, and I think that people who like to call themselves rational ought to face up to that. You can't just sort of sweep half your life into a separate corner and say, "Oh, well, that's the irrational part. I don't think about that. I switch off my brain when I come to that." I mean, of course, you're entitled to switch off your brain if you want to, but I think you need to face up to the fact that that's what you're doing.
But in a sense, you're forcing people into a corner to say, "Yes, I do believe that science is the way to explain the universe, and therefore I don't believe in God," or, "I believe in God, and can I not believe in science too?"
Well, I wouldn't want to force anybody to say what they believe. I mean, I think you could very well say, "I understand exactly what you mean by God, and I genuinely don't know whether there is one." I mean, that's absolutely fine. But sort of to say, "Oh, you can't ask that question. Faith is protected ground. It's not a question you can ask." I mean, you do your science separately, but when it comes to faith, you suddenly switch off all your questioning faculties.
So do you think that the Bishop of Oxford and the Archbishop of Canterbury, those people are deluded?
I think they're wrong, but I wouldn't wish to use the word deluded in an insulting sense. I mean, I don't think they're insane.
And, how about in the sense of the book, the God Delusion?
Well, I merely think that it's a mistake, and I think it's wrong. I mean, I don't think that it's a delusion in the sense that an insane person is deluded that they're Napoleon or something of that sort.
Another theme of your book is about morals, and you've said several times about how the Bible, you can cherry pick the Bible for good things, so be good to your neighbour, you know, don't kill people, etc. But also there are lots of terrible things which we don't take from that. So therefore there's some sort of inherent moral in us. Where do we get that from? Do we have any sense of where that might come from?
I think it's a very difficult question, and it's something that sociologists, historians, and as well as psychologists and biologists need to think about.
Is it a question for science, then?
I think it is a question for science, yes, and for history and for science in the general sense of the honest seeking after truth. The main point I was trying to make is that it certainly doesn't come from religion. It's grafted onto religion after the event. As to where it comes from, I see it as a shifting zeitgeist. It's something that's sort of in the air, and without being able to explain it, it's perfectly clear that there is something in the air, and that something changes. You can read a decade if you hear somebody talking morals and talking about the current moral feeling of the time. You can tell what time it is. If there's the level of subliminal racism can more or less enable you to pin down a decade of the 20th century, for example. The attitude to women, the attitude to children, these things are subtly shifting all the time. And what it is that shifts them, I think it's a sort of distillation of conversations, journalism, courts of law, parliamentary decisions, newspaper editorials, plays, books. It all goes into a melting pot of a steadily shifting moral zeitgeist. But insofar as it has any relation to religion, it's kind of tacked on.
Still, though, that's something in the air that you talk about, that sort of explanation. It's a bit of a... It's the kind of explanation that you sometimes yourself have used about the God argument. It's a kind of non-explanation because we don't know what it is, so it's God.
No, I think that's unfair because it's a non-explanation in the sense that it's complicated and I haven't pinned it down. It needs research. But that's very different from saying it's God, because God really is saying it's something very positive. But there's no evidence that something exists. I don't think it's helpful to say this shifting spirit of the times is God. It's something. It's a complicated mixture. Then we know of other complicated mixtures. For example, there's a very well documented law, Moore's law, as I'm sure you know, that computer power doubles every 18 months. This is an empirical law which has been true for the last 30 or 35 years. I don't think anybody really knows why it happens, but it does happen. And I suspect that, once again, it's a complicated mishmash of effects. There's advances in hardware, advances in software, all sorts of things combined to produce not just a shift, but a shift with a remarkably quantitative precision.
It sounds a bit like evolution, doesn't it?
Yes, but we understand what's driving that. And I don't understand what's driving Moore's law, and I don't understand what's driving the shifting moral zeitgeist. But it's a challenge to find out, whereas calling it God stops the challenge dead in its tracks.
You mentioned Lord Winston earlier. Sort of famously, I suppose, a couple of months ago, referred to your book in a lecture he gave at Dundee University. And I'll quote something he said. He said, "I find the title of The God Delusion insulting. I have huge respect for Richard Dawkins, but I think that it's very patronizing to call a serious book about other people's views of the universe and everything a delusion. I don't think that's helpful. And I think that it portrays science in a bad light." Now, you obviously know Lord Winston and probably have a repartee with him. What was your response to that when you saw it?
I too have an enormous regard for him. He's a very dear friend. When I saw that, my response was, well, I want to read the whole speech before I comment. So I didn't in fact comment. And he said the same thing just now on the radio. Now, my feeling is that if you disagree with somebody, if I say that something that God is a delusion, if you disagree with something, then what you do is you come back and argue. You don't say, oh, I feel insulted. You argue. You say, no, you're wrong, because so-and-so, look at this evidence here, look at that evidence there, you're wrong. And that's what Robert Winston or any other scientist would do if it was a scientific disagreement. And this morning on the radio, he even alluded to a scientific disagreement, which was interesting. And I pointed out to him that hard and even vicious sometimes the scientific arguments get. We argue, we discuss, we look at the evidence. We don't just say, oh, I'm insulted.
So do you think this wasn't a scientific argument?
Yes, I do. Well, I think that religion has carved out for itself a special protected niche where instead of arguing, it says, I'm insulted or I'm offended. I think that offence is what people take when they can't take an argument. It's a kind of last resort.
your books in the past, you're famous for your work on evolution, and this is a sort of slight departure into a more political arena. The God Delusion is a bit more of a departure in that respect. You're taking on quite a big institution with religion and the church and so on. But what's kind of next for you? What are you going to take on next, do you think?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's that much of a departure, because my interest in religion is actually a scientific interest. Not so much the scientific explanation of why people are religious, although I am interested in that and I have a chapter on that. But I do think that the fundamental question of religion, which is does God exist, is a scientific question. And in that, I know I depart from a lot of my scientific colleagues, but I do think that it's a profoundly important scientific question. Is there, as a matter of fact, a supernatural intelligence in the universe? If that's true, it's the most stupendous scientific fact we have. If it isn't true, ditto, really. So I do think it's a scientific thing. I wouldn't agree that it's a departure. As for what I do next, I haven't decided.
And once you've taken on the entire universe, is there anywhere else to
well,
go?
Well, no, I mean, it's not like really like that. I see it as a rather smaller thing than that. I think it belongs in the list of questions that science needs to answer.
In the tour you've done for this book, then, the people you've talked to all over the world, has there been a sense of something else that you could answer about this particular topic? I mean, do you think, for example, that science is under attack around the world?
Well, I do think there's a sense in which science is under attack. In America, it's under attack from what they call the religious right, and the phrase "religious right" has almost become a single word in the American dictionary. It's almost as though you can't use sort of, there's no space between them. In Britain, we've long had a religious left, and so there's for us it sounds a little bit odd. But anyway, in America, science is under attack from the right, which pretty much means the religious right. Often over my own subject of evolution, and often over creationism. But I think at the same time, science is under attack from the left in the form of cultural relativism, a sort of view that if it's true for you, then it's true for you, and scientific truth is only one of many alternative truths. In North America a few years ago, there was a skeleton discovered, the so-called Kenwick Man, which was, I think, 9,000 years old. And so it was obviously of huge archaeological importance, huge scientific importance. But it was seized, and scientists were not allowed to work on it, not allowed to do DNA testing on it, for example, because a local tribe of Native Americans said, "This is our forefather. We demand the sacred right to take care of the body because the spirits would be troubled," and so on and so forth. And they said things like, "The scientists tell us that humans arrived in North America over the Bering Strait from Asia, but our oral histories tell us that we've been here since the beginning of time." And there was a sort of caving in by the intellectual left. Oh, this is their culture. This is what they believe. We must respect that. It was absolute nonsense, of course. I mean, we know perfectly well that their view of the universe is simply false. And yet, because we are nice liberal intellectuals, we are expected to cave in and treat their beliefs with respect. This particular tribe of North American Indians couldn't possibly have had any affinities with, or very unlikely anyway, with a man who lived 9,000 years ago. I mean, he was something clearly completely different. He had no more connection with them than he did with the scientists.
More robust with that? Of course,
yes. But in the current political climate in America, you couldn't do that. You have to respect. You have to treat with respect people's religious and cultural beliefs, because they are religious and cultural beliefs, and precisely because they don't have to answer for them, they don't have to argue for them. They simply say, "That's our culture, that's our faith, that's our belief. Back off and don't question it."
So what's the way out?
Question it. Question, question, question. Do what scientists would do. Say, what is the evidence that Kenwick Man is related to this particular tribe, the Umatilla or whatever they are? What is the evidence that humans arrived in North America across the Bering Strait? Evidence is evidence. It's public. Everybody can look at the evidence and assess it, and eventually, if there's enough evidence, come to the same conclusion. You don't say, "Oh, well, that's just the scientific worldview. Now, on this other worldview, it's what people feel is right, and that's all you need in order to establish truth." Nonsense. That what you feel has no necessary connection with the truth at all.
I look forward to your book, How to Question Everything. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you very much. Good.
Thank you very much.
You managed to make it different from previous interviews too, which is quite an achievement.
That's really kind.
Praise indeed. That was Alok Jha talking to Professor Richard Dawkins. To hear more from Alok and myself on our Science Weekly podcast, head to guardian.co.uk/science/podcasts.
Guardian Unlimited.